Hello, everyone. I'm Becca, dietitian by trade, mom 24/7, wife from the start, and when there's a few extra hours in the day, you might find me hitting the trails or on horseback.
And I'm Kara, a therapist to women, a mom to a boy, an entrepreneur, mountain junkie, and a postpartum runner.
And this is Fit for a Queen, a podcast that's devoted to the female athlete wanting to balance the teeter-totter of all the things we desire out of life as women. Performance, health, intellect, and taking time for self, even if we only get 1 minute out of the day.
We're so excited to be bringing you the queens in the athletic world who have done just that. Okay, ladies, take a seat at your thrones, grab your crowns, and welcome to Fit for a Queen.
Well, welcome. We're so excited we have Kate Bennett on today. How are you, Kate?
I'm doing well. How are the both of you?
We're doing good.
Yeah, getting through today.
We always have fun in the studio.
That's awesome.
So I'll give a little background. Kate is a clinical sports psychologist and the director of Athlete Insight. She supports the clinical and performance needs of athletes worldwide and specializes in the treatment of athletes recovering from eating disorders. Prior to becoming a psychologist, Dr. Bennett was an athletic trainer and cycling coach. During her coaching career, she coached several state and national champions, as well as earning 2 national championships herself. As a sports psychologist, she watched several of her athletes win national championships, as well as excel as collegiate and professional athletes.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Bennett has presented the American Psychological Association, Association for Applied Sports Psychology, the Female Athlete Conference, the International Association of Eating Disorder Professional Foundation, and Medicine of Cycling Conferences. In addition, she authored Eating Disorders in Athletes and co-authored Motivation and Mental Training. Thanks so much for joining us, Kate.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here.
And now setting into life of the mother of 2, huh?
Yeah, I heard you're a new mama.
I am, yes. Our little guy is 5 months old, so we are slowly settling into life as a family of 4.
Oh, gosh. Well, congratulations on that. I know that's probably a hard transition.
It is. It's a fun, crazy, chaotic phase of life, but I'm enjoying every moment of it.
Oh, good. Awesome. Well, Kate, you have such a unique background with being a competitive cyclist, a cycling coach, an athletic trainer, and sports psychologist as well. Can you tell us how you blend all of these together as a therapist working with your clients?
Absolutely. You know, I believe it really enriches our relationship when I'm working with athletes. As an athletic trainer, I definitely understand kind of the medical aspect of not only athletes' well-being, but also injuries and the eating disorder, disordered eating aspect as well. And so, you know, when an athlete's coming to me with chronic stress fractures or stress reactions, that really gives me an avenue to say, hey, with my background in sports medicine, I understand a little bit more about what's going on. Let's talk about seeing physical therapists, let's talk about seeing a dietitian or a nutritionist. So it gives me a platform of I actually know what I'm talking about versus they can just blow me off and be like, well, you're a psychologist. What do you know about medicine?
Within the
cycling, both being an athlete and a coach, I definitely understand the competitive mindset and what it takes to be an elite athlete as well as what it takes to be a healthy person. And so when I work with my individuals, whether they're working with me purely for performance aspects or more for eating disorders and disordered eating, I push them really hard because I know that they can handle that. I know that that's what athletes thrive on is being able to be pushed and directed in ways that are meaningful for them and help them achieve their goals. But then the psychologist in me is really that compassionate, caring place. And so they get pushed hard, but they also have a place to come and rest and cry or tell me how hard it is or accept fear and doubt and know that they're not going to be judged for that. And so I believe that the background really allows me to understand where they are in life and what they're wanting to achieve and the pressure and demands of that. But also kind of my clinical training allows me to be right there with them and provide a place where they can just settle in and be an individual without having to achieve anything or excel at anything for an hour of their week or their month, whatever it is that we're seeing each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Do you think it gives you kind of a different level of respect from the client, them coming in knowing kind of that background as well?
I do. You know, with athletes, it's very much merit-based. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of merit with my background and my experience. And so I think it's a lot easier for us to establish trust when they know that I understand them as much athletically as I do personally. And when I work with my athletes, you know, during our introduction, I always say, well, I'm the expert on psychology and sports psychology, but you're the expert on you. Mm-hmm. You're going to know yourself better than I ever will. So even though I know a lot about kind of the medical aspect of athletics, and I know a lot about exercise physiology, and I know a lot about nutrition, and I know a lot about psychology, they're the experts on their own bodies. And so I really honor that, and it allows us to come together to build a foundation which allows them to excel and achieve whatever goals it is that they're working on.
Love that. Well, I've had the pleasure of hearing you present on what you call the mental toolbox. Can you tell our listeners what that means and how they can use their tools?
Absolutely. So the mental toolbox really is a set of skills. You know, and basically what happens is when athletes work are trained towards a goal, whether that is to make the varsity team in high school or make a D1 scholarship or become an Olympian, whatever it is, they work really, really hard on the physical aspect. So they work really hard on training their bodies and optimizing their performance. Nutrition often goes hand in hand with that. But they don't necessarily forget about their head, but they don't know how to work on their head. They don't really have this concrete, tangible idea in regards to how to making their head tough. And so the mental toolbox is essentially a skill-building curriculum that allows them to be confident, resilient, and mentally tough athletes when it matters most. And so within that, I talk a lot about mindfulness training is one of my favorite go-to skills. I think it's essential, especially with the idea of the absence of judgment. And I really focus on fostering the idea of excellence over perfectionism. I often get a lot of perfectionists and people-pleasing athletes. And while it gets them far in sport, it doesn't necessarily allow them to feel satisfied or achieve their true potential when they're working to please others or to be a perfect athlete. So I do a lot around mindfulness, which challenges that idea. And we talk a lot about wise mind and emotional regulation is huge because we sport brings out all sorts of emotions. It brings out joy and excitement and pleasure, but it also brings fear and frustration and disappointment. And so I help athletes start to label those and understand their emotions and figure out what to do with them, both in training and competition, as well as before and after competition. I do a lot around relaxation and deep breathing. How do we regulate our internal energy in a way that's meaningful? So if an athlete tends to run really high on energy and gets really anxious and nervous before competitions, we talk about bringing that down through relaxation. But in reverse, some athletes, even though they're really excited, their energy doesn't run that high. So they have to work on kind of psyching themselves up and getting really excited for competition. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of skill building around how do we manage energy in a way that is meaningful. The foundation for my work is values. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why is it important to you as a person? And this is really important when it comes to eating disorders, because if an athlete says, well, I want to go back to sport, they need to show me how is sport important to the core of who they are, and really demonstrate this idea of it's not just about being able to move again, but it allows me to connect with things that are so important to who I am as a person, and it allows me to be the best version of myself. I do some motivation work. Typically when people call me, they're really motivated. So I don't have to do the motivation aspect. They want to do better, so motivation is okay. A lot of goal setting. And when I do goal setting, you know, there's that common idea of long-term and short-term goals, or there's that idea of SMART goals, specific, measurable, adjustable, realistic time. So people are really familiar with those. But I talk a lot about outcome goals, which are kind of concrete, measurable goals, me against others, me being judged, things that I don't actually have control over, which is typically what athletes like to set their sights on, which is great for motivation because it really focuses their effort and allows them to work really hard towards something they want to achieve. But at the end of the day, it can be a huge blow to confidence because somebody could have their best performance ever and not achieve their goal. And so they walk away with their head hung of, I didn't podium, or I didn't win, or I didn't set a PR, whatever it is, I didn't get the score I was looking for in gymnastics. And those are outside factors, right? They can't control whether somebody else has a better performance than they. They can't control whether the judge saw what they felt internally. And so I talk a lot about performance goals, which is me against myself, things that I have total control over. And so while I want to win, everybody I work with wants to win. While I want to win, I'm going to focus on everything that I have control over. And when I do that, I give my best performance, and that sets me up to win potentially. Oh, and so when it comes to goal setting, it really is about performance goals, the controllable things that athletes can, no matter what happens, whether you know, there is, you know, they're running their state cross country race and a blizzard blows through, which could happen in Colorado. They're not going to set a PR blizzard. Yeah. But they can still have an effort that they're really proud of and walk away from that CV being like, I gave it everything I had, and that makes me happy. And they build confidence through that. I do a lot of self-talk work. And so that's really this idea of that internal dialogue that goes on in our heads. I have athletes record that, and then we look for the negative messages. I mean, we tend to be our own best critics, our own worst enemies. And so what I do is I have athletes record their thoughts, and then we talk about neutralizing them. So if an athlete comes to me and they say, you know, I'm just not as good as so-and-so, or I'm like a cyclist, you know, I'm terrified of descending. I'm terrified of going down a mountain at 60 miles an hour on a teeny tiny little road bike. Like, the opposite of that is like, oh, I love descending. No, that's not true. There's no truth to that statement. So if I'm trying to tell them to believe that, they're like, you're full of BS, right? There's no truth to it. And so we talk a lot about, well, what are the facts? Well, descending can be scary, but how do I know I'm safe? How do I keep myself safe? How do I know I can go down in a Peloton and be safe? And so we focus on their facts, and that allows them to reframe it from fear to neutral. And that's my goal with self-talk reframing, is take it from the fear-based response or the whatever the comparison it is that they're going on in the head, and put it in a neutral place, because when it's neutral, they can act on it. If our emotions controlling our actions, it's never going to be congruent with that, what we actually want to achieve in our lives. So we do that. I do a lot of visualization, and visualization is funny because typically I talk to athletes and they say, hey, Kate, I want to work on mental skills, and I bring in visualization. They're like, oh, I've done that. My coach has told me to do that. My dad's told me to do that. So, you know, and then I break it down. They're like, oh, I've never done that. And so I actually make it a useful skill. It's a common word, and it's a common practice, but people don't actually teach it. Mm-hmm. And so I make it a useful skill. One of my favorite and probably kind of the most exciting skill is pain tolerance. I teach athletes how to suffer greater. And really learning how, especially endurance athletes, I mean, it's all about suffering. And so I really help them harness their mind. So when they're in that idea of pain or discomfort, learning how to manage it psychologically so it doesn't actually slow them down or interfere with their goals. Mm-hmm. And then I use some other, you know, kind of CBT-based skills like thought diffusion or something like that, where it's really how do we take a scary situation and make it more humorous, funny, or something like that. And I do a lot of really specific confidence work. So leading up to a really important event, I really just focus on specific confidence building activities to allow my athletes to really show up feeling strong in their preparation, because we know that confidence is kind of the sum of preparation plus your controllable plus your past success, right? So if they can really own their preparation and they can focus on harnessing their controllables, and they reflect on the success they've had in the past, and they're going to show up feeling really excited to compete. And then that sets the stage for a great competition and something that they can feel proud of.
So great that is. How many times does somebody have a bad performance and the first thing they think is, what did I eat? Should I weigh different? You just give us like 1,000 different tools that they can mm-hmm. look at to alter their performance.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing is, because weight is something that's so easy to manipulate. And I say easy in quotes because it's not really that easy, but it feels very easy. It's controllable. It's concrete. It's something that I can focus my energy and effort on and know whether or not I'm achieving results. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It's often like, hey, well, what can I do with my nutrition? What can I do with my diet to change my performance next time? When it's actually, what can I do with the 3 inches between my ears? Because mm-hmm. that's going to make a bigger difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are some great tools. Thank you, Dr. Bennett. With both you and your husband coming from a competitive athlete background, coaches, and now parents of 2 kiddos, how do you approach sports as a parent, or do you approach them any differently than you feel society generally guides us to do?
It's funny that you asked that question, because I have a lot of friends who ask me, well, what are you doing with your daughter? Is she in sports yet? And I'm like, no, gosh, no. She's 2 and a half. She's way too young to be an organized sport. So in a sense, I think I rub against the grain a lot when it comes to the modern idea of sport and athlete development. But at the same time, I've surrounded myself with professionals who believe the same thing to me as me. And so when you say, do I do things differently? Well, I feel like I do things the way that the people I respect do things. I'm a huge champion of the nonprofit Changing the Game Project, which really focuses on athlete development and building a whole person through sport versus just success and achievement. And so I really have found a group and a community that supports that same idea. So Am I doing things differently than mainstream culture? Yes, absolutely. Am I doing things differently than the people that I respect in the field and what I believe is actually really healthy for my children? No. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's funny because my daughter, she loves sports. Like, she is so athletically talented and gifted, and she is fearless. Like her father, and it's incredible. Because she, you know, she watched the Olympics, and she wants to race snowcross, and then she wants to do figure skating, and she wants to do gymnastics, and she just has this energy about her that, and knowing her as well as I do, she could do any of it. But I will never put her in a really specialized training program. My plan for both of my children and my husband is totally in line with my views. Is they'll play a lot of sports, they'll get to do a lot of activities. And then as they get a little bit older and they find something that they really love, we'll allow them to do more of that. But it still never be a year-round ex-athlete. Mm-hmm. They're always going to have multiple sports. Because not only psychologically is that important to prevent burnout, but physiologically, if you start individualized or like sport-specific training at a young age, the chronic and overuse injury just skyrockets. You know, right. The body, mm-hmm. the young body is not made to tolerate that repetitive motion over and over and over again. And so when I think about the physiology of my young children, it's my job to protect their bodies. And I'm going to do that by making sure they play a lot of sports and they do a lot of things that allow their bodies to grow and develop in healthy ways. And it's my job to protect my children's pets. And so that means that I'm really going to make sure they have a variation of experience. And while they may love one sport and we do more of it, there's never going to be pressure to be the best at that sport. There's never going to be pressure to get a scholarship in that sport because I can't afford to pay for their college. There's never going to be, and that's not to judge other parents, but coming from my perspective, I have kids in my office that say, well, I can't quit my sport because my parents can't afford college. And they right. tell me if I can't get a scholarship, I can't go to school. Mm-hmm. And that's a real problem. And I can certainly empathize with that. But the poor child is sitting in front of me miserable and depressed and saying, I need to do something about it.
It's a big pressure.
You know, and so that's where I think, you know, and there's also evidence suggesting that college programs are looking for multi-sport athletes. Mm-hmm. They want kids who are well diversified, that they're physiologically their bodies can respond and adapt to the stresses of training. Psychologically, they've done something different. They're not burnt out. They're not just doing it to pay for college, that sort of thing. So when it really comes to early sport specialization and youth sports in general, the focus is on winning and the focus is on scholarships and long-term development. When we need to exist in the moment. We need to be with our children as they are, as 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 15-year-olds, and meet their needs today versus trying to focus and prepare them so much for 5, 10, 15 years down the road that we overlook their actual needs in the moment.
Great. Kind of reminds me when we were at the Female Athlete Conference and we go from having dinner talking about like our goals with our career, then we hop in the Uber to go watch the Boston Red Sox, and we're both on our phones with our daughter, and here's mine giving a play-by-play of the day, and yours is talking to you in, Mommy, you have to take me to the ballpark for a hot dog. And it was kind of like, this is what life is really like, you know? Yeah. So you better get into that ballpark for that hot dog.
She went this summer and she ate 2 hot dogs.
Good for her. Kate, I love talking to new moms, and I have a question for you. We talk a little bit about like bouncing back, air quotes, after having a baby and returning to the sport we love or whatever activity level that we had before baby. So what is that looking like for you and reconnecting to your sport that you love after having baby number 2? What are kind of your realistic expectations for yourself?
You know, it's funny because, so I've been through 2 pregnancies now, and with my daughter, I'm a cyclist, and I rode as far as I could into that pregnancy until it became just physically uncomfortable. And with my son, I was pregnant with him in the summer, so I hit that point much earlier where it was hot, I couldn't breathe, I was like, this is not fun anymore. Mm-hmm. So I actually did some circuit training work. I have a gym in a community that I really love in town, and it's a small community, and the owner of the gym accommodated me, and I worked out all the way up to the day before my son was born. Mm-hmm. And everything was modified, but it all allowed me to feel strong in my body in a way that felt meaningful to me. So I honestly don't know how much I weighed the day my son was born. I don't know how much I weigh today. I actually don't know how much I've weighed in the past 10 years, because I think that weight is such a head game. But what I found in my experience with my daughter was I rode my bike and then I hiked all the way up until she was born. But when she was born, I just felt so weak and I felt so uncomfortable in my body because I didn't trust it to be able to do what I love to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't trust it to be able to trail running. I didn't trust it to be able to go bike riding. I remember the first time I ran like a mile and I was freaked out that like my body was going to fall apart because it just felt so unstable. And so that journey for me allowed me to really understand body dissatisfaction versus body image issues, because I was comfortable in my body, but it had nothing to do with how it looked. And it was more that it didn't allow me to do the things I loved to do. So with my son, fortunately, I have found this gym and I love the community. It really is an uplifting community. And I did, tangent, I actually did, between the two pregnancies, I did a little bit of research in town and I went to all of the different gyms and all of the different ideas in regards to fitness and explored them all. And that was more from kind of a therapist who treats eating disorders. I wanted to see if an athlete said, I want to go to X gym. What do you think? I want to have been there and been able to say, I support it or I don't support it. And so I kind of checked it all out and I landed at this one gym that I just fell in love with, both in regards to the programming and the structure of the workouts, as well as the people who show up to the workouts. And so the owner really catered to me. I actually went in the day before I was induced, and I went in the day before I was induced, like, really hoping to have, like, spontaneous labor. I was like, okay, today's the day. I'm going into labor today.
You probably wouldn't appreciate that, though.
Not here.
But so then coming back, as soon as I got the clearance from my OB, I went back to the gym, and I said, hey, here's where I'm at. And they've really, again, worked with me in regards to this idea of being able to feel strong in my body again. And again, it has nothing to do with how I look. It really is about how I feel in my body. And so I've been going between one and three, and well, zero, one, and three times a week, you know. And when you say, how does it look postpartum? Well, now I have two kids and a job. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of me actually being able to work out several times a week just is unrealistic for many reasons. And so my goal is to go three times a week, and that's actually how my gym is structured, is three workouts a week. That's really how they want it to go. But it's as much about me being connected to a community I really enjoy and being able to be in my body and feel strong and confident in it, and know that when I want to get out on my mountain bike this summer, I'll have the fitness to do that. And if I want to go for a trail run, my body won't fall apart, as well as just being able to get some general health back. And so it is, I think, you know, the postpartum body is such a head game. And there's so many unrealistic expectations in regards to social media and so-and-so, whichever celebrity has bounced back and looks amazing after having their child. But the reality is it really should, the focus should be on how you feel in your body versus and what it allows you to do versus how your body looks. And certainly there's a part of me that wants to be able to wear my old clothes. Like, I'm in this kind of weird space where maternity clothes don't fit and my normal clothes don't fit, and what am I doing with that, right? That's not a fun struggle, but that's the least of my concerns. You know, it's more about my head being able to do things that I love to do and my body feeling strong enough to be able to do those things.
I love that, having the goal of finding that confidence again in your body after going
love.
Through that journey of baby and postpartum.
Well, you've given us lots a little bit, but we always like to wrap up each interview with how you live out the FIT philosophy of balancing performance, health, intellect, and time for self.
You know, it really, for me, when I think about fitness, it's about health and joy and pleasure and values. And so, you know, if I can't make it to the gym, I always check in with myself. Is this about me physically needing an outlet this week and needing some place to care for myself physically? Or is this really about me just feeling like I miss my community? You know, I feel like at this point in my life, certainly my appearance matters to me. But body image is so far from a concern, you know, versus, you know, my 20-year-old college self. It was a much different story. But for me, I really come back to values and self-care and checking in with myself with how am I balancing the needs of my family with the needs of me personally, knowing that I'm the best version of myself when I take care of myself. And that doesn't mean I always get to do what I want to do. Yesterday, I planned to do a workout, and instead I had to go to the DMV and buy a license plate for my car. Like, that was not...
No, that's not fun.
It was a life necessity, you know, and so... Then I just started to think about, well, what else can I do, or how else can I maybe do something for myself since it feels a little bit unbalanced this week. And so I typically know if I'm getting a little bit irritable, I know that I haven't put enough energy into me to be able to give as much as I need to be able to give. So I always check in with myself first and it really is a balance in fitness. I feel like, you know, it really in fitness and health and strength and well-being is really looking inward in regards to how am I pouring into me so that I can be the best version of myself in relationships, the best version of myself in school, the best version of myself, you know, in work or sport, whatever it is that's most important to that person. And it's a daily question. It's not like, oh, I'm doing great this week, I don't need to ask it anymore. You know, I think it's a daily reflection of how am I doing as a person, how am I doing as a mom, as a wife, as a friend, a colleague, whatever, as a psychologist and the people I work with. And if something feels off balance, then I know I need to slow down and figure out what it is that I need to put back in perspective to be able to be the best version of myself. I'm also realizing that sometimes the best version of myself is good enough. It's not necessarily the best, but it's good enough for that day, and that could be okay. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Well, Kate, always lots of words of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming on, and we'll be sure to put your website up and any of your other resources on the show notes.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Love Kate. It. Bye, Queen.
Bye, Queen.
Great, bye.
Thank you to our sponsor today, Sentimano Counseling. Sentimano Counseling is the premier perinatal mental health practice in Kansas City, treating mood disorders during pregnancy and postpartum, perinatal loss, infertility, eating, and exercise disorders. Go to sentimano.com for further information about the practice and services. For additional information on today's topic and guests, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FitForAQueen. And
hashtag fit for a queen.
And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We can't wait for you to join us next time on Fit for a Queen.
Bye, queens.